this land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I went along.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Peter Barnes, who's an entrepreneur and writer who started several successful businesses, including Working Assets, now Credo. He has written for Newsweek, The New Republic, and numerous other magazines, and is the author of five books, including Who Owns the Sky and Capitalism 3.0. He co-founded On the Commons with Jonathan Rowe and is the editor of Jonathan Rowe's new book, Our Commonwealth, The Hidden Economy That Makes Everything Else Work. Welcome to Background Briefing, Peter Barnes.
Thank you, Ian. Nice to be here.
And we were just speaking with Michael Copps, the former FCC commissioner, the lone voice that voted against many of these big mega mergers in terms of corporate ownership of the media and in terms of, in fact, you know, fewer and fewer and more and more powerful corporations owning more and more of the media and information spectrum. And he was quite passionate about the great battle for net neutrality to preserve the last of the commons, if you will, the electronic commons. And I see from your new book that you edited, Our Commonwealth, The Hidden Economy That Makes Everything Else Work, that you see this equally as an important, if not vital, frontier that we need to hold on to.
Absolutely. The book that I edited by my late friend Jonathan Rowe is called Our Commonwealth, and it talks about a lot of things that we don't notice or even think about as being ours, part of a commons that belongs to everybody. But certainly the airwaves and the internet are two of the most important commons out there, and both are under constant threat, as are all aspects of the commons, are under constant threat of being privatized in one way or another. And Michael Copps is certainly right about the internet being under threat from all sorts of big corporations. And the same is true for the airwaves, which now increasingly, because of our mobile phones and Wi-Fi and so forth, are an absolutely critical asset to keep in the commons, not only to keep, but to expand the availability of free internet access via the airwaves. Free universal Wi-Fi would be a great leap forward, so we wouldn't have to pay cable companies and phone companies to do all the things we now do. That's one thing that Jonathan Rowe talks about in this book, Our Commonwealth, is how some cities in America, including Philadelphia and others, are going down this path of creating municipal Wi-Fi systems, which would be available to residents in the city for free. So more of that plus net neutrality on the internet would be really important things to fight for.
Well, Peter Barnes, Michael Copps mentioned, of course, when I brought up the city of Chattanooga that has the best and fastest internet in the United States in terms of broadband, and it's a public utility in the city of Chattanooga, Tennessee, and he mentioned that there are a number of other municipalities that have this, but what's happened is the big corporations like AT&T and Verizon and Warner, they're apparently, through their influence over state legislatures, are preemptively passing laws that prevent municipalities from doing this to provide that kind of service to their consumers and customers. And so there you have it. This is a battle. And the corporations are much more aggressive, I'm afraid, than we are in terms of pushback.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is the problem more broadly, that you've got powerful private profit-maximizing corporations who are just all over the place trying to expand into every nook and cranny that they can. And yet, on the other side, the side of the commons, there's very little organized defense, much less offense. So this is a real problem. Speaking of the FCC, though, the chairman, who I believe just resigned, Julius Genachowski, before he left, he did put out a proposal for there's all this spectrum, broadcast spectrum, that was given away about 10 years ago to the TV companies so that they could convert from analog to digital. But now they have excess spectrum that they can't use and or are not using, and the FCC wants to get that back and make it available for public Wi-Fi. So whether this is going to happen or not, who knows? It's going to be another one of those all-out battles against, you know, corporations versus the people. But if it did happen, it would be a major breakthrough.
Again, I'm speaking with Peter Barnes, who's an entrepreneur and writer who started several successful businesses, including Working Assets, now Credo. He has written for Newsweek, The New Republic, and numerous other magazines, and is the author of five books, including Who Owns the Sky and Capitalism 3.0. He co-founded On the Commons with Jonathan Rowe and is the editor of the late Jonathan Rowe's new book, Our Commonwealth, The Hidden Economy That Makes Everything Else Work. Now, clearly, the issues that you bring up in the book came to light, particularly in the last election, when the dichotomy between makers and takers was brought up by Mitt Romney, who was recorded surreptitiously. And then, of course, later in the campaign, the president mentioned rather innocuously, actually, that the wealthy in this country, who have basically had a pretty good deal for the last several decades, they're not responsible for everything. They didn't make everything. And he was talking about roads and infrastructure that have enabled them to operate and become wealthy. And, of course, that was seized upon by somebody who's actually, in a way, the worst example of capitalism, an asset stripper, Mitt Romney. So where do you think we stand in terms of that argument, in terms of the public consciousness? I mean, clearly Obama won.
Yeah, Obama won. I don't think that argument has great resonance with the public, obviously, but it is a constant refrain that you hear from rich people, that they earned their wealth through hard work and being smarter than everybody else. And if you didn't make a lot of money, that just means you're lazy and stupid. Of course, that is absurd. Most people who are wealthy, you know, I'm not arguing that they didn't work, but what I'm saying is that the wealth that they have accumulated comes not so much from their work, but from a whole array of gifts from society and from nature that they had absolutely nothing to do with creating. Bill Gates, you know, if you want to start with, like, the richest man in the world, or maybe now he's just the second richest, but if you really look at Microsoft and try to figure out where their wealth comes from, it isn't from any great genius in writing software. It's, first of all, from the copyright protection that they get for free from the U.S. government. Secondly, it's from monopoly power in a couple of important markets. Third, it's from the when any company, including Microsoft, goes public, the value of the stock goes up by some multiple, not because of anything the company did, but just because of liquidity, which is a socially created value. Anyway, you could go on, and when you dissect the fortunes of just about any of these rich people, well over half, you know, you could probably argue three-quarters of it, is essentially a taking from the public. And this they don't talk about. So if we could reclaim, we the people could reclaim some of the wealth that really rightfully belongs to all of us, we would have a much more equitable distribution of wealth and income in our country.
Well, Peter Barnes, not only is corporate capitalism incompatible with the biosphere in terms of what we're seeing with the effects of global warming, because it's based upon growth and consumption, and the biosphere simply, and Mother Nature is telling us enough already. And the other aspect, I think, is that, you know, even a reactionary like Henry Ford realized you had to pay your workers enough money to buy your product. And this financialization of American capitalism with the growing power of Wall Street has led to a capitalism of extracting wealth but not creating wealth, as the robber barons did. This has led to, for example, the millennial generation now, through the ownership that the powerful and the oligarchy, if you will, have over our politics, where they're able to buy the Congress, in effect. There have been some pernicious laws passed, particularly with for-profit education, student loans, which is now second only to household mortgage debt. Students simply cannot be forgiven for these loans. And you have this phenomenon where this whole generation are being indentured, many of them ending up with worthless diplomas with no job prospects. And that's never happened before. And speaking as a father of a millennial, fortunately, she went to medical school and just graduated. But a lot of her friends simply, you know, living with their parents and looking at a pretty bleak future.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm the father of a millennial as well. It's tragic. It's horrible. And there's no way out that's in sight. But, you know, this does go back to the question of the commons, because the only way we're going to preserve a large middle class in America, which is what we're talking about here, is through, not, it's not going to be just through jobs, because there are never going to be a large supply of middle-class jobs in America, again, for a variety of reasons, globalization, mechanization, automation, and so on. So that period we had after World War II, when there were a lot of high-paying union jobs, which was how the middle class was built in this country, plus the GI Bill and free education and things like that, those days are over. The only way going forward that we can sustain a large middle class in this country is through sharing wealth and giving everybody non-labor income that comes from the wealth that we actually do share. And one way to do that, for example, which would simultaneously deal with the climate change problem that you mentioned, is to put a cap on carbon emissions, make the polluters pay, and take that revenue from pollution and distribute it equally to every American, one person, one share. Similar to what they do in Alaska with the oil revenue, but this would be done with polluters paying, which they now do not do. So everybody would get an income stream from the commons, if you will, because the air is part of the commons. And this income stream could grow over time with other sources of revenue from the commons, and that would supplement what people earn through labor. So some kind of combination of labor income plus income from the commons, I think that's probably the only way going forward that we can keep a middle class in America.
And, of course, the prerequisite will be for more political involvement, because you've got to take back the government from the oligarchs.
That is the fundamental prerequisite in all of this. We really need to have a movement that has enough power to fight successfully against the corporations and the oligarchs, as you call them.
Well, Peter Barnes, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Well, thank you, Ian. It's been a pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Peter Barnes, who's an entrepreneur and writer who started several successful businesses, including Working Assets, now Credo. He has written for Newsweek, The New Republic, and numerous other magazines, and is the author of 5 books, including Who Owns the Sky and Capitalism 3.0. He co-founded On the Commons with Jonathan Rowe and is the editor of the late Jonathan Rowe's new book, Our Commonwealth, The Hidden Economy That Makes Everything Else Work. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how Monsanto is using its muscle to suppress research on lab rats fed with GMO grains.